powerful, wealthy organizations like the National Rifle Association might want to buy elections, but campaign finance laws stop them from doing so. At least they're supposed to. New reporting suggests the NRA may have circumvented those regulations in support of Tom Tillis's 2014 bid for Senate. That race was the most expensive Senate race in American history at the time. Mike Spies spent 2 years digging into the NRA's campaign contributions and recently authored a piece for The Trace, a nonpartisan newsroom focused on gun violence. And he joins me now. Mike, welcome.
Oh, hi. Welcome. Excuse me. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So this reporting came as a result of your deep dive into NRA campaign contributions. You came to learn that the NRA started giving large sums of money to a new client in 2013. Can you tell me a bit about your findings and who that client was?
Yeah. And I guess maybe the best way to understand it is to work chronologically. I've been looking in the NRA's FEC reports because I was curious about who it was hiring to do its ad work for elections. And I noticed that starting in 2014, or at least that cycle, one particular vendor was eating up the vast majority of its business to the tune of like $19 million. And it was called Starboard Strategic Inc. So I just was curious and I thought, well, what is this? What is this vendor and what do they do and what's their history and who else are they connected to? So I started to look, you know, like anyone would. I just started doing basic Googling and there was just no information that came up on them anywhere. And then eventually I found what I guess I would describe as an extremely skeletal website that had absolutely zero information on it. It almost looked like it was a template for a branding firm. It just, there was nothing on it, no way to contact anyone, no lists of clients. No portfolio of work. And I thought, that's really odd. And then I started to poke around in the FEC reports a little more and I discovered, Starboard has only ever worked for the NRA except for in one very small instance. So why is that its only client? And it only started showing up in reports in 2013. Here's this brand new firm that's eating up all the NRA's election business. So the next step was actually going to the website and pulling its registration certificate, which is just, you know, when you register a domain, you can privatize it if you want to, but it didn't. In this case, it didn't happen, and there was a name on the certificate, and the name was Wesley Anderson, and it also included the name of what appeared to be a different firm called On Message Inc.
So there was a potential relationship between On Message, which you were familiar with, and Starboard Strategic.
Right. And then when I went to On Message's website, they have two offices and they have two office addresses. And I looked at their office addresses and I was surprised to see that they exactly matched the office addresses that were listed in connection with Starboard Strategic Inc. in the campaign finance reports. Then I said, wow, that's a really weird coincidence. Is this the same firm? What is this? And then taking it a step further, I started to pull corporate records and stuff like that and discovered that the partners for either firm were the exact same. And it appeared that there was no meaningful distinction between the two entities at all. So then the question became, why? Why is this happening?
So to help us understand why this is happening and why it's significant, I think we probably need to outline a little bit of campaign finance law.
Sure.
And the two most important regulations that are really relevant to the story.
Yeah. So based after 2010, when the Supreme Court made its Citizens United ruling, the deal essentially was if you're an outside group such as the NRA, you can spend as much money as you want to influence elections, but the money has to be independently spent from the campaigns that you're supporting. So what that's called in, you know, people commonly think of as independent expenditures. But those expenditures, as I said, are only independent if they're done without coordinating with the official campaign that you're supporting. If you're coordinating those expenditures, which is to say sharing information with the campaign that you're supporting, then they all of a sudden become something else, and that is direct contributions. And there are very strict limits on direct contributions from outside groups to campaigns. In the case of the NRA and outside groups like it, it's $5,000. So if you're suddenly spending millions of dollars and doing it in coordination with another – with a particular campaign, in this case perhaps Tom Tillis, you're in fairly gross violation of the election law.
And that's one piece of it. And the other is about the use of a common vendor. So an organization, right. an outside right. organization and a campaign can use the same vendor, but specific right. protocol must be in place.
Right. So that's – so that's and that's exactly where the story ends up going, which is that – so in this – let's use the Tillis campaign as an example. It is fine for the Tillis campaign and the NRA to share a vendor in an election cycle, which is to say each can use the firm for messaging work, advertising, that sort of thing. But it is incumbent upon the firm to set up or have in place what is essentially called a strict firewall policy that – everyone working for the firm and either client is supposed to sign and comply with. And the firewall policy says you're not allowed to talk to the staff members working for the other client because it would end up violating the coordination or end up violating the Federal Election Act. You know, you can't it would qualify as sharing information. So it's a sworn legal document that says you're not going to do that. And one reason that somebody might set up a shell company or what appears to be a shell company is to sort of obfuscate that relationship. And that is what might have or appears could have easily happened in 2014 going forward with Starboard Strategic Inc.
So what evidence do you have that OnMessage and Starboard were used as conduits for coordination? And how exactly does that violate campaign finance law?
Well, so it's – What we can say for sure is that, again, focusing on Tillis, in 2014, the Tillis campaign's top contractor was OnMessage Inc., and they paid it something like almost $7 million. And at the same time, the NRA was listing Starboard Strategic in its campaign finance reports for work that it was doing in support of Tillis. And in that case, it was like just over $3 million. Previously, in 2010 and 2012, the NRA had contracted OnMessage Inc. for campaign work and would list OnMessage Inc. in its campaign finance reports. So this was a big change. All of a sudden, OnMessage disappears after Starboard's created in 2013 from the NRA's campaign finance reports. And it's just going forward, it's just Starboard. And then the question is just, is there anything that distinguishes the two entities from each other? In the case of Starboard, unless you unearth the corporate records and the website registration document and other related materials, nobody has ever publicly associated him or herself with Starboard. There's none of the partners who are in the corporate records have associated themselves with it. There's never been an effort to market the entity to any other potential clients. It exists exclusively to service the NRA, which raises all of these troubling questions, which is why after I shared my findings with two former FEC chairs, one Republican and one Democrat, they both said that the FEC should investigate. And that would be the ultimate only way to get to the bottom of whether or not anything nefarious happened in that particular cycle.
One question that your piece raises for me is why. So if the NRA and Tom Tillis's campaign can both use OnMessage as their vendor and there is no problem there, that would have been legal
right.
if a firewall were in place, why
right.
did they create what appears to be a shell company and kind of do a sloppy job of it?
It's a great question. I mean, there is – that should really be emphasized. It would have looked way less shady to not create Starboard and just list OnMessage. And the worst thing that would have happened would have been that maybe somebody would have seen that, filed a complaint with the FEC. The FEC would have given the NRA an opportunity to respond. The NRA would have said, well, OnMessage has this strict firewall in place. They would have perhaps produced the firewall agreement and that would have been the end of it because that – whether or not it passes the sniff test for us, it certainly satisfies generally like what the law requires. So – It's really unclear. I think the oddest thing about creating Starboard, or maybe the thought for them, was that nobody will notice. I mean, the only reason truly that I notice is because it's my job to cover the gun lobby, and I don't think that there's anyone else who focuses exclusively on that. So there's just no, you know, for the average person or any person, any watchdog group looking, it just would have been like, oh, okay, let's start. You know, there would have just been no reason to merit further digging, which is probably why it's been going on for, you know, why it didn't come up until now.
So do the campaigns themselves bear any responsibility in all of this, and how have they responded to your reporting?
No one's responded. In fact, I mean, the part of the what became so intriguing and perplexing was that none of the parties involved in this story would participate. When I say participate, that would mean, you know, supplying details about firewall policies, talking about how they sequestered certain certain staff members from each other. So I don't as far as I know, while I have given everyone involved numerous opportunities to reply to requests for comment, not just that, but also they've all been made well aware of basically far in advance of publication what was going to be in the story. They just declined to participate. So I think ultimately the campaign, to come back around to your question, you know, if there was an investigation and there were some findings of fault, I mean, the campaign is in a position to perhaps deny that it knew what was going on. The NRA is the first one that gets punished, and they're the ones that are listed. In fact, recently this week, a campaign finance watchdog group filed a complaint with the FEC based on the story, and the NRA is listed as like the party that is presumably in the wrong. So I guess it's the special interest, and then following that, it's the vendor, because they would obviously have had to have been in communication with each other to create this sort of relationship. But the campaign has a tougher. It's tougher to pull them in that particular way.
So a complaint has been filed. I know there's been one public response to your article from On Message in a statement to North Carolina outlet WRAL, who denied any wrongdoing and tied your piece to a liberal agenda, referencing the fact that the organization you work for is partly funded by Everytown for Gun Safety, which is a gun control advocacy group. I only have about 30 seconds left, but what is your response to their response to your piece?
As with us, he with that particular reporter in the local outlet, he declined to provide any details about the firewall agreement. So nothing has changed. And as far as it goes, we're a completely independent newsroom, and the story itself was published on the cover of Politico magazine last week and was fact-checked and also lawyered by two sets of lawyers. So it's also based on all, you know, primarily primary documents. I don't think there's any statement of fact or any statement of opinion in the entire piece except for those offered by the former FEC chairs. So I think it's disingenuous and in some ways deceitful, because Brad and his partners have known for a long time that this was coming and known everything that was going to be in it.
All right. I'm going to have to stop you there. Lots of twists and turns in this story. Check out the article at our website, stateofthings.org. Mike Spies, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Just ahead, we will meet a world champ in the art of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Please stay with us.